Beneath the vaults of the official of Saragossa, at dusk one evening long ago, the venerable Pedro Abuez de Spilla, sixth prior of the Dominicans of Segovia and third grand inquisitor of Spain, followed by a redemptorist friar, the master torturer, and preceded by two familiars of the Holy Office holding lanterns, descended into a deep dungeon. The lock of a massive door creaked, and they entered a foul-smelling emporche, where by the light from the window above they could just make out, between the iron rings fastened to the walls, a rack black with blood, a small stove, and a pitcher. On a bed of dung held by shackles and with an iron collar around his neck, there sat a man of now indeterminate age, haggard and dressed in rags. This prisoner was none other than Rabbi Asa Abarbanel, a Jew from Aragon, who, accused of usury and pitiless contempt for the poor, had been subjected to daily torture for over a year. Nevertheless, his obduracy being as tough as his hide, he had refused to abjure. Proud of an ancestry dating back several thousand years and glorying in his ancient forebears, for all Jews worthy of the name are jealous of their lineage. And this had helped to sustain his courage in the worst of his unceasing torments. It was therefore with tears in his eyes at the thought that such a steadfast soul was shutting itself out from salvation that the venerable Pedro Arbuez de Spilla approached the trembling rabbi and uttered the following words. My son, rejoice. Your sufferings here on earth are about to come to an end. If in the face of such obstinacy I have regretfully been forced to permit the use of many harsh measures, my task of brotherly improvement nonetheless has its limits. You are the stubborn fig tree, which, having been found so many times without fruit, runs the risk of drying up. But it is for God alone to pronounce judgment on your soul. Perhaps his infinite clemency will shine upon you at the supreme moment. Let us hope so. There have been examples. So be it. You may therefore rest in peace tonight. Tomorrow you will take part in the auto da fe. In other words, you will be exposed to the quemadero, the brazier, which is a foretaste of the eternal fire. As you know, my son, it burns only at a distance, and death takes at least 2 hours, often three, to come, on account of the icy wet rags with which we take care to protect the forehead and the heart of the sacrificial victims. There will be only 43 of you. Remember that you will be in the last row, and you will therefore have sufficient time to call upon God and offer him the baptism of fire, which is the Holy Ghost. Put your hope, therefore, in the light and sleep. As he finished his speech, Don Abruez, who had motioned to have his wretched man unchanged, embraced him tenderly. Next, it was the turn of the redemptorist friar, who in the low voice begged the Jew to forgive him for all that he had made him suffer in his attempt to redeem him. And then he was embraced by the two familiars, whose kisses were muffled by their hoods. Once this ceremony was over, the prisoner was left in the dark, alone and bewildered. Rabbi Asa Abarbanel, his mouth parched and his face drawn with pain, looked vaguely at first at the closed door. Closed? This word in the very depths of his being started a reverie among his confused thoughts. This was because for a moment he had caught sight of the light of the lanterns through the crack between the wall and the door. A morbid surge of hope stirred in his whole being. He dragged himself towards the fantastic thing which had appeared to him, and very gently slipping one finger with great care into the opening, he pulled the door towards him. To his amazement, by some extraordinary chance, the familiar who had shut the door behind him had turned the massive key a little before the impact against the stone door stiles. As a result, the rusty bolt of the lock had not gone home, and the door opened once more into the cell. The rabbi ventured a glance outside. He made out, first of all, a semicircle of drab walls pierced by spiral staircases. And in front of him, 5 or 6 stone steps leading up to a kind of dark porch which gave access to a vast corridor, only the first arches of which could be distinguished from below. So lying down on the floor, he crawled along until he was level with this threshold. It was indeed a corridor, but a corridor of inordinate length. It was lit by a pale glimmer, a dreamlike glow. Nightlights hung at intervals from the arches, lent a bluish tinge to the dull color of the atmosphere, and the far end of the corridor was all in darkness. There was not one side door in its whole length. On one side, on his left, grilled air vents and recesses in the wall allowed a light twilight to enter into the gloom. It must have been evening because of the red streaks which streaked the flaglights here and there. And what a terrifying silence. Yonder in those mists, there might be an exit leading to freedom. The Jew's wavering hope was tenacious, for it was his last. Without hesitating, therefore, he ventured on to the stone floor, hugging the side with the air vents and trying to blend into the walls. He went forward slowly, dragging himself on his chest and keeping back a cry whenever a newly opened wound throbbed with pain. Suddenly the sound of sandaled feet reached him, and a fit of trembling seized him. Anxiety choked him. His eyesight dimmed. This was probably the end. He squatted down in a recess and waited, more dead than alive. It was a familiar in a great hurry. He went swiftly by, a terrifying figure with his hood lowered and an instrument for ripping out muscles in his hands, and he disappeared. The shock to which the rabbi had just been subjected suspended his vital functions, and he remained for nearly an hour before being able to make a move. In fear of even greater torments if he were caught, the idea occurred to him of returning to his dungeon. But the old hope whispered in his soul that divine perhaps which comforts men in their worst distress. A miracle had happened, and there could no longer be any doubting it. He accordingly began crawling once more towards his possible escape. Exhausted from suffering and hunger and trembling with fear, he went on. This sepulchral corridor seemed to stretch out in some mysterious way, and he, pressing endlessly onwards, kept his eyes fixed on the darkness in the distance, where there had to be an exit, which would be his salvation. But here once more came the sound of footsteps again, but this time slower and more sinister. The white and black figures of the two inquisitors, wearing long hats with turned-up brims, came into sight, emerging from the gloom at the site and at the end of the corridor. They were talking together in low voices and seemed to be arguing about some important point, for their hands were waving about. At this sight, Rabbi Asa Abarbanel closed his eyes. His heart pounded violently, and his rags were soaked in the cold sweat of a death agony. He remained open-mouthed, motionless, stretched out along the wall beneath the rays of a nightlight, imploring the God of David. As they arrived in front of him, the two inquisitors stopped in the glow of the lamp, doubtless by some chance of their discussion. And one of them, while listening to his companion, found himself looking at the rabbi. And beneath this gaze, whose absent-minded expression he did not understand at first, the wretched man thought that he could feel the hot pincers biting into his poor flesh again. Once more, he was going to become a wound and a groan. Fainting, unable to breathe, his eyelids fluttering, he shuddered as the man's robe brushed against him. And in some strange yet natural way, the inquisitor's eyes were obviously those of a man absorbed by the idea to which he was listening, profoundly preoccupied with what he was going to say in reply. They were fixed in a stare and seemed to be looking at the Jew without seeing him. A few minutes later, the two sinister figures continued on their way, walking slowly and still talking in low voices towards the intersection from which the prisoner had come. They had not seen him. This was so obvious that in the horrible confusion of his emotions, this question crossed his mind. If no one can see me, is that because I am already dead? A hideous vision shocked him, shocked him out of his lethargy, and he looked at the wall. He saw two fierce eyes observing him. He threw his head back in an abrupt movement of utter terror, and his hair stood on end. But no, his hand groping over the stones had just told him that it was a reflection of the Inquisitor's eyes, which still remained in his own, and which he had refracted onto two spots on the wall. He hurried now towards that goal which he imagined to be freedom, towards those shadows which were now no more than 30 paces away. On hands and knees and belly, he resumed his painful progress, moving faster, and soon he entered the dark part of the terrifying corridor. All of a sudden, the poor wretch felt something cold on the back of his hand, which he was pressing on the flagstones. It was a strong draft blowing under a door at the end of the two walls. Oh, God, if that door opened onto the outside world, the whole being of the pitiful escaping prisoner was seized by a sort of dizzying hope. He examined the door from top to bottom without being able to see it very clearly because of the darkness all around him. He groped with his hands. No bolt, no lock, a latch. He stood up. The latch gave way under his thumb, and the silent door swung open before him. "Hallelujah," murmured the rabbi, standing on the threshold and giving an immense sigh of thanksgiving at the sight of the view before him. The door had opened onto the gardens beneath his starlit sky, and to spring, to freedom, to life. The view extended over the surrounding countryside, stretching towards the sinuous blue lines of the Sierras which stood out on the horizon. And there lay salvation. He would run all night through those groves of lemon trees whose scent already reached his nostrils. Once in the mountains, he would be safe. He breathed in the good sacred air, and the wind revived him, and his lungs came to life once more. In his swelling heart, he heard the veni foras of Lazarus, and in order to bless once again the God who was granting him this mercy, he stretched his arms out in front of him and raised his eyes to the sky. He was in ecstasy. Then he thought he saw the shadow of his arms turn back towards him. He thought he felt those shadowy arms encircling him, clasping him, pressing him tenderly against the chest. A tall figure was indeed standing before him. He trustingly lowered his eyes towards this figure, and he remained panting, terror-stricken, hollow-eyed, trembling, his cheeks puffed out and his mouth dribbling with fright. He was in the arms of the Grand Inquisitor himself, the venerable Pedro Arbues de Spilla, who was gazing at him with tears in his eyes, and with the expression of a good shepherd who had found his lost sheep again. The sinister priest pressed the wretched Jew to his breast with such a fervent impulse of charity that the points of his monastic hair shirt scraped the Dominican's chest beneath his frock. And while Rabbi Asa Abarbanel groaned with anguish in the arms of the ascetic Dom Abrues, dimly realizing that all the phases of that fateful evening were nothing but a prearranged torture, that of hope, the Grand Inquisitor, in terms of poignant reproach and with consternation in his gaze, murmured in his ear with a burning breath, tainted by fasting, "What is this, my son? On the eve, perhaps, of salvation, how could you think of leaving us?"
Torture by Hope by Auguste Villiers de l'Isle-Adam was read by Barnard Hughes.